Our second feature for this evening brings us to more serious business. We hope that the purists in our audience will not be too upset at certain liberties we have taken in our adaptation. Here is Bernard Mays as Mr. Jorkins, and Pat Franklin as his female companion in Lord Dunsany's story, The Witch of the Willow.
I wandered about the country, always alone, not caring really where I went. One day I came to the willow wood, a haunted sort of place, marsh floating all through it, ideal for a lonely and aimless man. I was tired of ordinary things and ordinary people, what they said and did, the everyday things, everything lacking in wonder, surprise, magic, mystery. And there was a mystery in the woods. The sun had begun to set, and the mystery was settling among the willows. Oddly enough, as I wandered deeper and deeper among the trees, the mystery didn't recede. Not a spell seemed lifted, but that ominous and immense threat of magic became overpowering. Suddenly, an old woman in a black cloak and a high black hat, carrying a black stick, she came towards me, and that mystery, that unaccountable thing that has been called magic, that was haunting the willows, moved with her as she came. She approached quickly, paying no attention to me until we were almost facing. Then a quick glance of her eyes, all magic and wonder in her ugliness, I fumbled for something to say.
Is there no way out of these marshes?
No, there is no way out.
I stood a while and gazed, fascinated by the mystery of her. She leaned her hands upon the stick and gazed at me, grey ringlets hanging down from under her hat.
What has come over these marshes?
Sunset and witchcraft.
What does the witchcraft portend?
Who knows that? Not even the witches know that.
And why do they make witchcrafts? Enchanting a place like this till one can hardly tell if one is still on earth.
If there's a warning put on a place, it's for folks to heed the warning, not to go bothering those that have other things to do with the way and the why and the wherefore. A warning's a warning, and that's all there is to it.
Well, the sun has set, and I think I'll take that warning.
Do as you will.
Now, if I come back, should I ever see you here?
You might come for weeks and never find me. And then one day I'd be here.
Then I'll come again. I'll come again.
I stayed at a little inn called World's End, a mile or so from the marshes. And that evening I returned barely in time for dinner. I couldn't put the mood of my strange adventure out of mind. And in contrast, the company, the whole interior of World's End was a dreary replica of life in general. Wholesome food, kindly people, the expected, the safe.
You haven't forgotten our cribbage this evening, Mr. Jorkins?
No, Colonel Haverson, but I'm a little tired, I'm afraid.
Mrs. Norris says you have been exploring the Willow Wood this evening.
Yes.
Take care of the marshes there. They're dangerous, dangerous, but a good place for grouse. In season, of course.
Later I stood at my window and looked down toward the woods. The moon lit the hillside, and below it I could see the trees. Black, darker than the night. The mystery still there. But when I walked down next morning, it was gone. It was gone when I went back at sunset. Day after day I went, and still she did not come. I haunted the place till all the water hens knew me and the rooks. Then, one afternoon, 2 weeks later, no sooner had I entered the solitude of the willows than the transformation began. The shadows between the trees became heavy with portents or omens. The stillness full of whispers. The mystery gathered about me. And in the midst of it, she walked with her black stick. The mystery coming with her. She nodded as she approached with what may have been a smile at the end of her lips.
Willow Witch, as you see, I have come back.
Hmm?
You told me there was no way out of the marshes.
Nor is there. You come back and back to them.
That's true. They have a hold upon me already, and it's not the marshes or the willows. When you are not here, they are nothing more than the time of day can make of any place. It's for the magic in you that I return.
The magic in me, and your weariness of the things of every day, pushed and pulled, back and back.
Where do you live?
Out of sight, out of hearing of the folks of every day.
Where?
Merling's Wood. Merling's Wood, by this path.
Wait, can I come with you?
If you can follow.
I can if you wait. The light is too dim to see the path.
You have to keep up.
But you disappear. When I try to look, you're gone. Wait.
Lunge, Mr. Jorkins. Oh. Lunge, or you'll never make it.
Wait. Wait. Wait.
But she was gone.
But that wasn't the first time we had trouble with the natives in that area. No, no. Sometime earlier that year. Oh, here, I wanted you to try some of this port. Yes, for the natives. During the cholera epidemic.
That was unendurable, unendurable.
During my... what?
I said it was it curable?
Well, with the right treatment. Yes, it was during the cholera epidemic. It was some time...
Then I did something absurd, but I couldn't help it. The decanter of port, Colonel Haverson's prize port, was sitting on the end table beside me. I'd been fingering the cut glass neck. The fireplace, several yards across the room, the large stone fireplace. Suddenly, quite unaccountably, I picked up the decanter and flung it against the stone.
Oh, I say, Jorkins. Jorkins.
I plunged out of the house, down the road to the woods, through the marshes. The mystery was everywhere, thicker than the trees, almost suffocating. But I headed as if guided through the woods. A wood remembered from one's earliest years. This strange, almost terrible feeling seemed to come from straight ahead. It was the path itself. Straight ahead, until it seemed to veer very slightly to the left. And from this I gathered that I should find the home of the witch. And sure enough, there it was. A cottage in the midst of strangeness. And mystery. The cottage was small and roofed with a dark thatch, windows made of round panes, the size and thickness of the ends of bottles. I heard my knock on the door before, or so it seemed, I quite reached it, and instantly it opened, and there she stood, in her cloak. Magic seemed to pour out around her.
Well...
I have come.
Yes. And do you come in? Do you enter a witch's cottage?
Yes.
Well, the door is open, Mr. Dawkins.
I entered.
And a swell of dark, terrible power seemed to leap at me. Then shortly the magic subsided. It withdrew to the corners and walls of the little room. A fireplace emerged, a glowing blood-red flame within it. A large black cat lying before it, and the witch bent over, sweeping something. The decanter. Colonel Haversham's decanter.
There's been an accident, but maybe it will be mended by and by.
The room was difficult to see clearly. A few things stood out. A stove, a table, several chairs, all strangely carved and inset.
Will you have some tea?
Yes.
Cowslip, briar rose, or daffodil?
Cowslip.
It was a strange brewing. She boiled water in a great kettle over the fire, then threw handfuls of withered dry cowslip blooms into her teapot and added a sprinkling of herbs. She filled with it two earthenware cups, glazed green on the outside, and instead of milk, she poured honey. All the while, her cat watched us from the fireplace. We sat watching the fire, drinking a strange tea. As the shapes of the coals changed, she peered more and more intently. It seemed as though events were passing before us through the deeps of the fire.
Trouble coming to the world.
Oh, what trouble?
All going the wrong way. Losing hope.
Where do we want to go? Where should we?
Ah, that's the affair of witches.
Do you know?
He knows. The old cat. The dark one. He doesn't run to town. He doesn't plan or worry. He knows what is coming, dark one. Winter, spring, nothing can hasten it. Nothing stop it, eh?
Do you care about the world?
Witches, we are abandoned and sought. Abandoned and sought. Withdraw and whisper.
What do you whisper? What do you say?
Oh, we provide.
What?
What you've come for.
What?
Not to know about the world.
Is that what you provide?
That's what you seek, Mr. Jorkins. You do not find the things of every day in my cottage, yet you come back and back. The ends of your world, Mr. Jorkins. Beyond.
Will I find it here? Will you help me?
Help you?
Show me. Will you?
Are you afraid, Mr. Jorkins?
Is it dangerous?
Surrounding the house, deadly power. It could crush you to the size of a pebble. Look, Mr. Jorkins. Handful of pebbles. You.
Why is it dangerous?
Why and wherefore? How and where to? Stakes and witches' gallows.
Is there a test? A price?
A wall, a blade, a fire? The things of every day, Mr. Jorkins. I'm not here to help you.
What danger, then? What am I to do?
Look.
Where?
Into the fire.
Fire? It isn't a fire.
Listen.
Oh, it isn't a wind.
Pet, my dark one. Pet, my dark one.
No,
Mr.
no!
Mr. Jorkins. See me, Mr. Jorkins. Could you ever love an old, old woman like me? Could you ever love an old, old woman like me, Mr. Jorkins?
That is the test.
Could you ever love an old, old woman like me?
An enchanted witch. I can break the spell by saying yes. Then all will be well. You'll emerge far lovelier than any creature.
Or a spider, or a goat, or a death's head twice as ugly. The look in your eyes, Mr. Jorkins. Magic and mystery on your own terms. Tests and prices, sleight of hand. Think no claim is to be made upon you. There, look. There's the abyss. There, the flame. Here, the emptiness. The ugly.
No.
Could you ever love an old, old woman like me?
No, stay away from me. You're hideous. Hideous.
Then, at the very words, there came a look in her eyes like flaming stars in the night. The cat appeared to increase in size to an enormous horror. The room became darker. There was nothing I could say to explain my refusal, except that all the magic and mystery that had first intrigued me was now horrifying and deadly. It was a wave that seemed to threaten all, a wave that began to fade away without breaking. I had rushed out of the cottage, but had not gone many yards from the angry witch when her house and the whole forest became, section by section, disenchanted. When I last saw her, she was standing there in her open door looking after me. Something of mystery still surrounding her. I couldn't distinguish whether her look was of rage or of sorrow. And as she and her cottage passed out of sight, I saw the last of magic that I shall ever see. Soon again I was back at Wall's End. Yes, the last of it. I searched again and again, but I never found the cottage. The witch never came back again to the Willow Wood. I finger Colonel Haversham's decanter of fine port. Not the least scar on it. For years after that, whenever twilight or sunset gave a queer look to a field or a distant hill, whenever anything strange seemed haunting birches or willows, I would set out at once, however far the walk, and in any weather or hour, to see if the magic that I have known had ever come back. No, it never came back. It never came back.
That was Bernard Mays as Mr. Jorkins, and Pat Franklin as the witch, in our version of Lord Dunsany's story, The Witch of the Willows. And now, we must break up our chain of empathy for this evening. We shall meet again around this hour, real soon, with another discomforting tale. Join us at that time. Good night.
The technical production for this evening's broadcast was by John Whiting. Music specially composed for this program was by Peter Winkler. Saki's story, Esme, and The Witch of the Willows, by Lord Dunsany, were adapted for radio by your host of the Black Mass, Eric Bowersfeld. This series was conceived by Jack Nessel and recorded in the studios of KPFA in Berkeley.